Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning we welcome Mark Burnett, not the TV producer, but the professional hacker Mark Burnett from LBMC, which stands for?
Lattimore, Black, Morgan, and Kane.
All right, a specialty firm and accounting firm, right?
Yes, accounting and business services firm.
Okay, and you are visiting us from Nashville, so first of all, happy Thanksgiving weekend.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We have made it through a wet Wednesday, a Thanksgiving Thursday, a Black Friday, a small business Saturday. I have no idea what to call today. What do you call Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend?
The Lord's Day, I guess.
There you go. It's also one of the busiest travel days of the year. But all of this, the reason you're here is to prepare us and warn us for tomorrow, which is Cyber Monday.
That's correct.
All right, let's get into a little bit of what I just set up. In other words, how Thanksgiving has become such a shopping thing. Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, which leads into Cyber Monday. What is and why is Cyber Monday?
Well, Cyber Monday was created by the retail industry, in essence, to respond to Black Friday. Because obviously, you know, Black Friday, biggest shopping day of the year. And so they basically came up with the premise to say, listen, let's see if we can capture even more of the dollars for people who either didn't get what they wanted on Black Friday or figured out other things they might need. And so they've created this premise of Cyber Monday.
I went against the grain. I did Cyber Friday last year.
Uh-huh.
I went on Amazon and bought my little computer on Black Friday online.
Hey, that's great. Yes,
I do
the same thing. I'd rather not brave the lines if I can avoid it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't understand the whole mentality of camping out on Thanksgiving so that you can get a $200 TV, but, you know, there are people who love to do that. That's their thing. That's their tradition.
Sure, absolutely.
So now, Cyber Monday, then, as I recall, I mean, I'm old. So as I recall, when we first started hearing about Cyber Monday, the excuse behind it was that people waited until they went back to work on Monday to use their internet connection, their high-speed internet connection at work to do their online shopping. And that's why it was Cyber Monday and not Cyber Sunday or Cyber Saturday or whatever. But really, times have changed where we have just as fast internet connections at home as we do at work. So tell me more about Cyber Monday. Is it still a thing? I mean, do the numbers actually spike on that day?
Well, they do. And you're exactly right. That was true. I guess that's kind of an indictment of the way the workforce was working at the time if they were using their company web access to surf the internet. But they still do. And again, I think that's because the industry has created the premise around Cyber Monday. And so it's kind of, you know, you come off the Thanksgiving weekend lull, you've done your really stressful Friday, you've kind of wound down a little bit on Saturday and here on Sunday, and then you're ready to get back into it on Monday to finish off that shopping list.
All right. Yeah, so you're at work or at home or whatever, but I guess now the reason that Cyber Monday survives is because the retail industry, like you're talking about, they will now create Cyber Monday sales and deals and an incentive to go online tomorrow to buy the $200 TV that you didn't get on Black Friday.
That is exactly right. Probably many of your listeners have already begun receiving emails advertising the big deals that will be available tomorrow.
Now, I mentioned that you are a professional hacker, and this is what we're going to talk about today, is some of the security measures that the average consumer, you and me, can do to protect ourselves against, you know, bad things online. Now, and especially when Cyber Monday, we're being driven and enticed, and there's this big carrot on the end of a stick that's going to get us to maybe click on a website that we've never visited before on Cyber Monday. We're talking with Mark Burnett from LBMC, which is Lattimore, Black,
Morgan and Kane.
Morgan and Kane. All right, I'm going to get it. By the end of the show, I'm going to have it.
Great.
All right. So let's talk about some of the things that the average consumer needs to be wary of, especially on Cyber Monday, but really every day of the year.
Sure. So one of the first things would be, you alluded to some of the emails that they'll be getting.
Yeah.
Some of the things the scammers like to do is to send out a hot deal type email.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of your listeners may be getting emails right now. And one of the things that I would advise against is don't necessarily click on the link in the email, especially if it's not from a company that you know very well or have done business with in the past.
If you're not subscribing already to that company's, you know, if you don't remember specifically signing up for their email list, don't click on any links.
Don't click on the link. If you think it's a deal you want to pursue, then what you should do is open up your browser, mm-hmm. and then in the address bar at the top, type in the URL, the web address itself.
The real one.
And go directly to it. That way, if it is a scam email, you won't, you know, you'll be a, in the email,
right.
You can appear to click on a link, but it may take you to a different site. This way, you can avoid clicking on a bogus link and go directly to the company's site and see if the deal is really there.
Because really, it doesn't take a lot of talent to create a copy of a professional looking email slash website. I mean, think about it. Any teenager, probably, you know, even younger than preteen, could go online, copy and paste a bunch of logos on it. And instead of making the link go to legitimateretailer.com, it could easily go to russianhacker.com, you know, when you click on it, because you're not going to necessarily pay attention to where those links take you. I'm a fan of email services such as Gmail and others that don't display the images or don't necessarily make the links active when you first receive the email.
Yes.
Because even when you just open the email for the first time, sometimes that's enough just for the image to show up on your screen. That might be enough to alert the bad guys that, hey, we got one. We got one on the, you know, somebody's nibbling at our hook right now.
Well, Frank, you're an expert at this. That's exactly right. So that preview view of your email, a client, can certainly be something that can alert an attacker that you've received the email or can validate your email address, which could increase the amount of spam that you get. Or depending on the nature of the virus that may be attached to an email, if it's got a virus on it, it could activate the virus.
Wow. We're talking with Mark Burnett about cybersecurity, specifically in the context of shopping online and Cyber Monday. Now, you did mention one thing that I don't even do. And that is when you go to the HTTP bar at the top and type in the address of the merchant that you want to go to, because I'm afraid I'm going to make a mistake. And I'm aware, again, having read a magazine, that sometimes the bad guys will buy the domains such as, I mean, I don't want to throw Amazon under the bus because they're one of the more reputable, but let's suppose for argument's sake, Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, you type one letter wrong, or Amazon or something like that. The bad guys will go buy these addresses that are so similar to the legitimate retailers, counting on you to make a spelling error. I generally prefer to start with my Google homepage and let Google, whom I trust, sort out if I type, you know, Amazon, to say, wait a minute, hey, hang on, don't you mean Amazon? I'm like, oh, thank you, Google. That's so, I don't even go directly to the What do you call that bar at the top?
It's called the address bar.
The URL thing.
The address bar.
Okay, yeah, I prefer to let the search engine just do a little bit of buffering for me to save me that mistake, the potential mistake of misspelling.
You can do that. The big challenge, the big risk you're trying to avoid is clicking on a link in an email. And so if you do a Google search, you've searched for the company name or you've searched for a particular, then you can click on
pheffernewsbymail.com. Yes.
You can click on that link. Now, be aware, though, that Google doesn't necessarily filter out. Google doesn't know all the bad addresses on the internet, so it may not filter out. It may include in its search responses a link to a bad site.
Okay.
That site could be infected by malware. It could be controlled by a bad guy. And so you may click on that link and go to that site, and they have an idea called what they call drive-by downloads, which basically means that simply by visiting the site, having it open in your browser, if your computer has certain vulnerabilities on it, you could immediately get infected with malware that could allow the bad guy to either take control of your system or take data off of your system.
Wow. All right. We're talking about malware, which is software that does malicious things to
your
computer.
Right. Okay. Malware is malicious software. They've shortened it to malware, but many of your listeners will know it as viruses and worms. Those are kind of the older iterations of the same phrase.
Now, many of us now are using different types of computers than we did as recently as a year or two ago. And what I mean by that is, you know, I have a Windows PC that I'd used forever, and I always had to, you know, update my virus protection. I had some other kind of, malware or spamware type of search thing that I would use. But now that we're on to iPhones and Droids and iPads and Chromebooks and things like this that don't run necessarily the Microsoft operating system, you know, are we more or less vulnerable? Because Microsoft was always the easy target for the hackers. They always all went after Microsoft and kind of left, we were under the impression that some of these other operating systems, such as Apple, were less vulnerable. Why is that?
Well, actually, the reason that the bad guys targeted Microsoft is because their operating systems were 95%+ of all the systems on the internet.
So if you think about the odds.
If you're a bad guy, you'd rather have it, you know, 95% chance at getting a machine than a 5% or less chance, which is what you had with Apple and the Linux versions of the operating systems.
Okay, but soon as those numbers start to change, we have to be more and more careful about the apps that we download for our phone. And about the other sites that we visit using Linux or using Apple
product, right?
That's exactly right. As a matter of fact, you know, you alluded to the fact that many folks are using tablets now, and they have their own operating systems that are different from the desktop operating systems. And one of the benefits of using a tablet is that most of the common viruses won't necessarily work on a tablet computer.
Yeah.
That's a benefit. The drawback is that usually with a tablet computer, most people are going into an app store and they're either buying or downloading a free app onto that app store, onto their device. And those apps go through a small vetting process that Apple will do before it can go into the Apple App Store. Google doesn't have quite as extensive a vetting process yet. And so it's very easy for a bad guy to write an app using some freely available tools on the internet, upload it to the Google Play Store, and then it will get added as a potential app. And usually what they'll do is they'll give it away as a free game or something like that.
Yeah.
It'll sound like a desirable game to you. You'll click on it and download it. And you know how when you install an app on the Android operating system, it will say, by installing this app, you're allowing the app to access your contacts and your phone number and your address book. It lists all the things that the app is going to have access to. That's Android's way of warning you, hey, I'm going to have to open myself up to give this app access to all this stuff. Is that okay? And normally, you click yes because you want the benefit of the application.
Right, because you want to see what the deal is at the supermarket this week. You want the supermarket app or somebody else or the radio station's app or whomever's app.
And of course, if you click no, then the app's not going to work.
Yeah.
So you click yes. Well, the bad guys will leverage that knowledge. And if you click yes on their app, then it allows them then to take information off of your phone and they can send it to themselves. And they might be using it for malicious purposes. They could be using it for identity theft, or they simply could be using it for marketing purposes to build a profile about you that would help them target things to you.
When I got my Android phone, I thought about downloading one of those flashlight apps, but I never got around to it because every review I read of every flashlight app, I'm talking like 10, 12 of them, that all said, why does this app need permission to see all my phone numbers or see, it's just a flashlight. Why does a flashlight need to know, where I'm standing in the world GPS wise at this exact moment? So I never got around to
Well, good for you. That is a very vigilant way to think about it. That's exactly right. If you're downloading a game and it says, hey, you know, I need to have access to your phone. Well, why do you need access to my phone for me to be able to play the game? And so that's a very good, you should think critically about that.
There's a few over time that I've uninstalled and then I looked up to see, well, just because you think you've uninstalled it doesn't mean you fully uninstalled it off your phone. So there's another step you can go through to really, you know, like, I wish I could remember because it's been a while since I've done this, but there was two things I had to do. One thing to basically turn off the app, but another thing to go back into the settings and really kick it out all the way.
Well, you can, some of the apps will install some portion of the app on your memory card. If your Android device has a storage card, it may store some data on that storage card, or it may install itself on the storage card. And so even though you may be able to make it disappear off your home screen, that may not necessarily uninstall the app. And so what I would suggest is go into your installed applications list, scroll through, find it there, and then let the operating system, the Android operating system, uninstall it for you.
We're talking with the very knowledgeable Mark Burnett, the professional hacker from Lattimore, Black, Morgan & Kane, or LMBC, as we like to call it in the business. I got you, right?
You got it.
You didn't see that one coming.
LMBC, yes. Yeah.
And today is the day before Cyber Monday. Tomorrow, a day that a lot of people get online and buy stuff, perhaps from websites that they haven't visited before. So we urge you to be careful as you go about your business and about your shopping. So let's run through some more of the different ways and different things to be careful about, because it's one thing we focus on email a lot because email is very easily counterfeitable in a way, and very easy to make an email that looks like a real deal. And it's very easy for your email address to have gotten out there by all these different means we're talking about.
Just because
you didn't sign up for the app or didn't sign up for the site doesn't mean that your friend who has you in their address book didn't give up your information. So that's why you'll get a lot of this junk via email, because some other idiot has let the Russian hackers have access to their address book, of which you are innocently a part.
That's right.
All right. So now, but social media now is, of course, the big thing. We see so many of these deals shared, and there's a lot of incentive. You know, hey, share this deal on your Facebook to blah, blah, blah. You know, get the coupon or get the whatever. And the same thing with Twitter and all these other different sites. Let's get on to social media a little bit with Mark Burnett from LBMC.
Well, so, you know, a couple considerations around social media. And generally, by the way, social media, it can be great, especially around the holidays, to keep up with family and friends who you aren't able to spend time with.
Right.
So I don't want people to be discouraged from using it if they happen to have
right, a, yeah, you got these days off. Account. You should spend your time untagging yourself for uncomplimentary photos.
There are a couple of things to think about, Frank, when it comes to using social media. First of all, the password that you're using for your social media site, like Facebook or Twitter or, you know, whatever your social media of choice is, you should use a separate password for that site than for your online shopping. And for all of your online shopping sites, you know, most when you go online to shop, most of them will give you the opportunity to set up a user account and password so that they can store your information for you and that type of thing. And
that's usually when I bail out. I'm like, forget it.
Well, you know, many will let you be a guest and you don't have to. But if they ask you to set up a user account, what you should know is that you need to set a unique password for that site.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's going to be a very unpopular recommendation because keeping up with passwords is difficult.
My wife has a spiral notebook in which you has to keep all the passwords because there's just too many.
There are too many. You're exactly right. There are too many. And in the security industry, behind the scenes, we're working to try to address that, and that's a topic for another day. But meanwhile, we have the password, and it's really the best way for you to prove that you are who you say you are. And that so that's why we still use the password for gaining access.
My son used to have a laptop where he could swipe his finger on it. It was a gaming laptop, I guess, what he bought, but he bought it for college. And now he's moved on to another one because that was, you know, however many years ago. I'm thinking, what happened to that? What happened to the? Let's go back to 2008, I guess it was, when he got this laptop where he would swipe his finger on it, and he could program his fingerprint mm-hmm. to be his password for different websites and to just even turn on the computer. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, you know, some of the newer versions of the phones are coming out. Apple's newest phone has the pink fingerprint scanner in the home button, which is on the front of the screen
good.
Now.
Okay.
So those things are coming back. Why they went away was reliability of the fingerprint. So what would happen is if your fingers were dirty or something like that, or if the scanner went bad, you couldn't get into your system if you hadn't set a backup password. And so it became unpopular with people who were frustrated with having difficulty getting into their system.
Because I've also heard about, you know, super high security. You see this in like James Bond movies where they pluck out the dude's eye, the old scientist's eye. What happened to his eye? Oh, they stole his eye because he needed it to get into the lab, you know, his retina scanner. What about other body recognition? I mean, besides fingerprint, is retina scans maybe a thing that we'll have to see in the future?
You know what? I can't imagine that they would do that on a phone or a computing device. Now, they can do those types of things in high security situations like you were talking about, you know, facility access and things like that. But I think probably they'll keep it very simple for consumer-based devices. PCs and phones would be the most you'll see is a fingerprint. Maybe someday they'll get to some sort of voice recognition.
Okay.
We have those capabilities today, and they're not perfect either, which is why you don't see them, but maybe someday you'll be able to talk to your phone and it will know your voice and authenticate
based on your voice. Celebrity impersonators would have access to the world.
That's right.
All right. We are talking with Mark Burnett, LBMC, Lattimore Black, Morgan & Cain, about Cyber Monday, about cybersecurity, about different things that you can do. So we're still on the topic of social media, and we have to worry sometimes about, particularly I see it on Twitter, but I guess it turns up everywhere, those shortened links that look like gibberish. You don't necessarily know if they're real or not because it's just a series of random letters that come from different countries, these little web domains from all over the world, right?
Yeah, those are called tiny URLs.
Okay.
You usually see them, it'll say tiny URL and have three or four letters after it.
BitLY is another one.
Exactly, yes, those types of things. And generally that comes from someone, one of your acquaintances or friends on Facebook who said, oh, you got to see this, and they've posted a link to a video, and the way that Facebook displays it to you is in that format.
Mm-hmm.
Your listeners need to know that many times bad guys are using those types of links to get you to their site.
Yeah.
Remember we talked earlier about the drive-by downloads. That's one way that they entice you to come to a bogus website is by getting those links embedded in Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And then unwitting users click on that. They go to the site. They see something on the screen. They don't know behind the scenes what's happening to their computer.
Right.
The bad guy may be probing it, looking for vulnerabilities, trying to install his malware, trying to get data off the system.
Yeah, now one thing I've read about recently is if you get a friend request from somebody you're already friends with, be very careful because the bad guys now are looking for Facebook profiles that are not well protected. So let's say, for argument's sake, that my friend Jane Doe, is just, she wants everyone to see in the whole world everything that she puts on Facebook. So everything is public, 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 public. Okay. So the bad guys are trolling around, and they say, oh, look, here's Jane Doe. Everything she posts is public. So they start copying and pasting and copying and pasting and copying and pasting, and they create a new profile for Jane Doe, and then they start friending Jane Doe's friends. And they're like, oh, of course, I'll accept Jane Doe's friend request. And then it turns out that every link in the fake Jane Doe's page is what we're talking about. It is some direction to some sort of malware, hacking site, blah, blah, blah. You know, and that's, I mean, come on, really? This is what we have to deal with nowadays.
That's a great point. And what they're doing is they're leveraging the trust that you have in Jane Doe that you say, oh, yeah. Well, Jane Doe, I know Jane. She's a good person. And, you know, so if she wants me to see this link, it must be something I really need to see.
Yeah.
And so you're assuming, though, that that's really Jane Doe on the other end.
Right. But if it's usually the way it would come around. I mean, your only protection now, of course, is your some memory cells that you might have in your own brain. It's like, wait a minute. Why is Jane Doe friending me? I'm already friends with her.
Well, you know, but the problem is a lot of people have had to disable and re-enable their Facebook profile either because they've had their password stolen,
yes,
or they've gone off of Facebook for a while and they've, okay, come back and started a new one. So I've gotten a number of requests on social media where somebody will say, hey, I decided to start over and here's a new. And so, you know, you don't know even when they do that if it's really them
point.
Or not. So, you know, you have to make a decision as to whether or not you want to accept them as a friend. And,
great point.
And you okay. know, consider that.
All right. Well, with Cyber Monday happening tomorrow, we do are trying to warn you of different things to beware of. We've touched on the emails and the basic social media skills that you should have. What are some other tips for Cyber Monday? And again, we can take that on throughout the entire year long.
Absolutely. Well, we talked earlier a little bit about passwords. And one of the key things with passwords, you know, I suggested that your listeners use different passwords on shopping sites. The reason for that is that if a particular shopping site is breached, their database is going to have an email address and a password associated with it. Mm. And if you've used the same password on multiple sites, the bad guys are going to immediately head to the common sites, Google, Amazon, Yahoo, those types of sites, and they're going to use the email address that they got from the database, and they're going to try the same password to see if they can get in.
Oh, okay.
So even though you may say, hey, well, Google's never going to get hacked, but if a smaller shopping site you do business with doesn't have the same security protections in place and they get hacked and you're using the same password, now all of your identity on the internet could be compromised because you've used the same password across multiple sites.
What type of protections do the big boys, the Googles and the Amazons and the Apples and the Facebooks of the world take against being hacked?
Well, we'd like to think they take a lot of protections, but something to keep in mind, you know, as it relates to Facebook and things like that, those are free sites, so they don't necessarily give you any assurances of security or privacy. If you know, if you read the user agreement, it doesn't necessarily guarantee you that they're never going to get hacked or that they're, you know, going to protect your data. It's part of a free site. You're not paying for the service, so they don't necessarily have to do that. Generally, the larger organizations are taking security precautions. There are some laws in place and some rules that have been prescribed by the credit card industry for organizations like Amazon that have to take credit cards that they have to comply with.
Okay.
So there are some things that they're having to do to make sure that the basic protections are in place over their password database and over their systems.
Now, we're talking with Mark Burnett, and when I was introduced to you, I was told you are a, quote, professional hacker. Let's talk about that a little bit. What do you do that makes you a professional hacker?
Well, my team focuses on information security and risk protection, and so organizations will use us to check up on their security so they can make sure that they are complying with the credit card rules, for example, or they're making sure they comply with HIPAA, which is the healthcare security rule protecting your
healthcare data. So your firm started out as a regular accounting firm but has kind of morphed into this security part of it?
We have a specialized group within the firm that focuses specifically on security.
This is you?
That's me and my team. That's
okay,
right.
Okay, and you're based in Nashville?
Yes, I'm based in Nashville. We have an office here in Knoxville as well.
Okay.
All
right, so what's a typical day? I mean, do you start just getting on the computer and say, all right, let's see, our new client is, hey, look, it's Jane Doe's Fashions, and we know that she's pretty loose and easy with her passwords because we've already hacked her Facebook site. But let's say Jane Doe's Fashions now hires you guys to do whatever. What would you do to their site?
Jane Doe's Fashions would hire us to see if we could break into her systems, and, you know, we would do that. Above board, we'd have a contract and everything. But if we break into the systems, when we get in, we'll tell her how we got in and how to fix it so the bad guys can't get in. So in essence, it's the company taking some due diligence to say, hey, we think we've done the right things, but we want to make sure. So we want somebody who knows where the holes are to see if we have those holes or not.
That's got to be fun.
And it is. It is a lot of fun. But Frank, we take it a step further because in addition to doing the internet-based stuff, you know, we'll generate fake phishing emails. We talked earlier about the bogus links, and we'll generate a fake site that looks just like the company site. We'll send emails to people inside the company and track the number of people that click on the link and go to our fake site. We'll see if we can get them to enter in usernames and passwords. We'll see if we can install software on their systems. And what we're doing for the company is, again, checking the awareness and vigilance of their users because they're susceptible. And if one of their computer
systems... Does it take them to the screaming clown face at least when they have...
We don't tell them. We don't want them to know. Oh, okay. We don't want to be detected. That's part of the point. We don't want them to know the test is going on, right? We've been authorized by the senior leadership team, but usually they don't want the staff to know until it's finished. And then they can use it as an educational teaching tool to say, hey, you know, we commissioned this test and unfortunately a number of people in the company fell victim to this and we want to coach you on proper protection and how to sniff out these bad things so that it doesn't happen again and put our company at risk.
Oh, wow. We're talking with Mark Burnetz, the professional hacker. I got a thing in the snail mail yesterday, or I guess it was over the weekend, before the weekend. It was said, it was from Google and they want to pay me $100 to track everything I do online. It's some sort of, it's like their Nielsen, their version of the Nielsen ratings. Well, I don't know if I should do it.
I haven't heard of that that particular service yet. Could be legitimate. Yeah. Sounds like something Google would do.
Yeah.
Although, to be honest with you.
I Googled it to see if it was real.
Good for you. Where's the irony there, right? But you know, frankly, if you're using Google today, they're tracking you already.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a Gmail account, most people who have a Gmail account have logged into their browser using their Gmail account. And so Google then not only is able to, you know, track what you're doing, but they can assign it specifically to you. So they know what sites you're visiting, what searches you're generating and things like that. And that helps
them. It
makes
it easier though, when you're trying to get back to that page you looked at yesterday, it's awful convenient.
Well, it helps them target the ads on the right side of the screen to you because they know enough about you. They can say, oh, well, we know that Frank is, you know, wants to see these types of ads because this is the types of searches that he's doing. And so it helps them target useful ads to you.
And Facebook does that too. It's no coincidence that you see mentions of your friends in the ads or things that you are. How did they know I was looking at that? How did they know I was, you know, looking up Christmas recipes? I don't.
Yes, you know, but
how do they know I like food?
If you're somewhat of a private person, that's a little alarming to know that these companies are able to gather this much information about you. And then you start thinking about, well, you know, I understand they're putting things on my screen for me, but what else are they doing with this information? And, you know, could they be selling it? Could they be using it for other purposes? You know, and so these are some of the things that my team thinks about is, you know, what happens to this type of data and how can we help organizations take protections to protect it?
I mean, we in radio, if we're trying to sell advertising to somebody, we want to say, well, our audience is this age group. And that's if you're trying to reach people in this age group. These are the people who listen to this type of music. Therefore, you should buy ads on the station that plays music for the younger audience, the older audience. You know, that's how you have to decide. And, you know, we have surveys that say, well, we know we have listeners in this zip code. So if you're trying to reach people who live in this area, well, then you should advertise on that station or that station in our family. So that's why, I as someone who works on an advertising-supported industry, I totally get why Google and Facebook, which are advertising supported industries, need that information. They need that marketing data so that they can sell the ads in the first place. They want to say, hey, look, people look at our ads. People who have so much money or who are interested in such and such a thing will look at your ad.
Hey, that's a great point, and you're exactly right. That's a good analogy, and that's true. Although I think the difference is people probably aren't it may not occur to them that Google and Facebook are tracking the information.
Right.
I'm quite certain they know from, you know, when the radio stations.
Yeah, we don't know for a fact who is listening at this very moment in time.
That's right.
We are extrapolating data based on a small survey sample and blah, 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 blah. But we're right. Whereas with the difference between regular media, TV, radio, you know, and the internet is the internet knows exactly who is clicking. And in fact, it probably knows their IP address.
And they do.
Yeah.
They sure do.
Yeah. I mean, I know when someone leaves a comment on my blog, I can tell you what their IP address is. It doesn't mean anything to me, but I can tell you what it is.
Well, and they generally know what type of computer system you're coming from, whether it's a tablet or whether it's a Windows computer Apple's computer or anything like that. They're tracking that information as well.
I have a little thing on my site that just says, who's visiting frankmurphy.com? And it shows you, anyone can click on it. It's not a private link. It shows you, hey, look, a visitor from Knoxville using Chrome on a Windows-based PC has stopped in and visited this and then left using this other link.
There
bye-bye.
you go. Yep. That's exactly the same type of technology
public information
that Google and Facebook would use.
All right. Well, we're talking with Mark Burnett from LBMC, Latimer, Black, Morgan & Cain. Cyber Monday is tomorrow. Thank you very much for coming in and telling us so much stuff. It's been amazing.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much, Frank. I've enjoyed our conversation.
All right. So do be careful online. And remember, you can always look up, I guess, some sort of cybersecurity tips before you go shopping, right?
Absolutely. Yes. There's lots of places online to find information. But bottom line is choose unique passwords. Make sure your computer systems are patched. So install operating system patches on them regularly, and that'll help protect you against a lot of those holes the bad guys are trying to use to get malware on your system.
Except you get the updates. Yeah.
Yes. And then be vigilant. Just, you know, be vigilant and critically consider links that you're visiting and things like that. And if you do those things, you're probably going to be safe.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark Burnett from LBMC, Latimer, Black, Morgan & Cain. This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.